Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, August 12th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book, Chapter 24 of that book, contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it out, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those often repeatedly, it will serve as a tutorial to help you get the most effective positive benefits from these tools as soon as possible. We hope people do all of those things soon and often, because primarily because it's been our experience that leads to people having a better life, more enjoyable life, better relationships, etc. Secondarily, because the more people do that, the more it stimulates comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please call us directly at 563-999-3581 or send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. You can email Jeannie at janie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if you send us a comment or a question or a testimonial, We'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a note about what day and time it was addressed so you can check it out in the archives if you're not able to be here live. So we're appreciative of everybody who's here, and we're optimistic that these tools, if you choose to use them, will help you improve the quality of your life and relationships. And we're always anxious to have you share that with us if that has happened. Yesterday on the show, we were reading more of the Way of Mastery, Lesson 18. I'm going into a review of Lesson 18, which we've read all the way through once. And one of the primary reasons for me doing that is because as I slow down and work with this material, I hear things, I feel things, I experience the exercises differently. And I get different impressions. One of the impressions that came to me the other day was, and I was talking about how the intellect can't solve our problems for us in this realm of the emotional realm, the psychological realm, the spiritual realm. And that's one of the things that the Way of Mastery talks to us about from the very first lesson, page 5 in the first lesson, where it says, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. The intellect was intended to be a very simple servant. It says, you know, if you pardon the expression, it was intended to be a very stupid servant. And a little bit later on, it says, the intellect, while it can't solve these problems for you, it can be the thing you use to recognize when what you're doing is making things worse or not working. And in this work and other works, they point out to us that our emotional state in any moment is like our internal guidance system. And so if we're feeling calm and safe and loving and centered and compassionate and grateful, we're probably headed in the right direction with our thoughts. If we're feeling tight or tense or any of the emotions we would label as negative, we can use the intellect in that moment as the alarm system, or to recognize the alarm system. The alarm system is the emotions that are tight or tense or negative, and we can use the intellect to recognize that. However, the intellect, in the Western world, we've been trained to have the intellect step in and try to figure out how to solve this, how to do things with its thought process and its intellect to fix this problem. And I was pointing out the other day, that can't happen. Your intellect cannot help you know what enlightenment is or how to get to enlightenment any more then the blaring sound of a fire alarm in a building is the thing that actually puts out the fire. The blaring noise coming from the fire alarm doesn't put out the fire. It just alerts a higher level of animation, integration, intelligence to the fact that there's a problem. And then a higher level of sophistication than the simple electronic signal going through a speaker to vibrate the noise at a high-pitched sound, that's very simplistic. So the more sophisticated mind-body-energy system of the humans have to come and do something with a variety of different factors to put the fire out and or keep people safe. So the intellect can hear the alarm in my mind-body-energy system, can see the problem when I'm feeling tight or tense or a negative emotion, and yet the intellect cannot solve the problem for me any more than the blaring noise of a fire alarm is the actual mechanism to put out the fire. So as I was listening back to the last few shows, it also came to me that you can extend that to, I used to talk about our emotions as part of our guidance system, like a Geiger counter or a compass for somebody who's on a boat. I used to talk about, because I live, you know, near Lake Michigan, and it has this relatively long, narrow shape. And it's long north to south. And it's relatively narrow east to west. So I would use the image of getting in a boat somewhere on the west side of the Lake Michigan, and my destination is directly across the lake at the same latitude. Right? So it's, I want to go to a point that's directly west of, or east of the point I'm leaving on the west side of the lake. And if I get in that boat and all I do is look at my compass, and every time I look at the compass in the front of the boat, I keep pointing the boat at the direction that the compass says is directly east, will I ever reach my destination? And of course, the answer is no. Why? Because there are currents. There is wind. There are waves. There are periods of time where I might have been going a little bit to the north or a little bit to the south, or somebody comes to relieve me and they're going to steer for a while. And while we're, you know, trading places, the boat gets a little bit off course. If all we do after the boat has been off course for a while is point it directly east again, which is all a compass can tell us. A compass can just tell us a direction. It can't steer the boat. But if all I do is keep pointing the boat every time I check the compass, wherever the boat or the compass says is east, I'll never reach my destination. I will be way off the way to the north or the south. Well, in this analogy, the compass can let me know where I'm headed in the wrong direction, but the compass can't steer the boat. Just like the intellect can help me recognize that I'm feeling tight or tense or any of the negative emotions, any of the emotions that I might say are negative, unpleasant, undesirable. And yet the intellect cannot change the dynamic that's moving me there. I need to cancel what my intellect is telling me, cancel my goals, cancel my thoughts, and ask to be shown something else, ask to be taught by the flow of life in the moment, and then learn to respond directly from that stimulation without the intellect going into the past, evaluating, judging everything, replaying old patterns. Another way to talk about this, Guy Finley brought up last night in the talk that we watched in the support group. And Guy Finley said, how would your life go if you're trying to plan what to do today and tomorrow if you only read yesterday's papers, yesterday's news? You're not even reading today's news. You're not looking forward. You're not even looking at what's happening now. You're looking at yesterday's news and last week's news. That's his way of talking about the very same thing. If I rely on what my intellect is telling me, what I'm relying on is the past. It's going to be in direct conflict with the Western mind, because the Western mind believes, has been conditioned to believe, that it knows what's right and what's wrong, and that it is the king, it is the God, it is the intellect, I mean the power to be used to resolve all the problems that will arise in a person's life. One of the things that Guy Finley says in a previous talk is that the mind will only cease doing what it's doing when it finally awakens and realizes that it is the source of its own pain, not the solution to its pain. And until that happens, the mind is, it's like a washing machine. It's like a tractor. It just keeps running. It's turned on. It's got engine. It's got fuel. It just keeps doing the same thing over and over again until it awakens and realizes that it is the source of its pain, not the solution to its pain. So, oddly enough, our whole life experience after we've been born and been conditioned into language and been conditioned into the thought patterns of the culture and started to accumulate these memories and these traumas and these beliefs and these experiences is driven to do the same thing over and over again unless and until we introduce a different level of questioning, a different level of input, a different level of integration. And that's what the Way of Mastery is trying to get us to do, and that's what Lesson 18 in particular is trying to get us to understand, is that if we want to know what we're doing at that conscious, logical, intellectual level, we will only do what we've been programmed to do. We will only think. We will only experience. We will only keep creating more of what we've already created. And the only way to have something new is to find a way to tap into an entirely different level of experience and integration and insight and intuition that the intellect cannot comprehend. So the intellect is like the compass on a boat. It's a really useful tool. But the compass can't drive the boat. It's very useful to have an alarm system to let somebody know when there's a fire in a building. And yet, when the alarm goes off, the blaring sound of the alarm can't put out the fire. It's just there to awaken and alert a higher level of intelligence and flexibility and resources, combination of resources, to alert that higher integrated mind to the fact that there's a problem that is in need of a higher level of intervention. And of course, we're just using words here, so what is higher versus lower? A different level of comprehension and experience. So when I have a conscious logical mind that's been raised in the Western world and I introduce it to this work and it says, I need to learn to be comfortable with the fact that I don't know what anything is or is for, my Western-trained mind is going to start screaming at me that this is insane. Why would you even read a book like this? It's not possible for there to be truth in this. And the point of this is that I need to breathe and soften when that part of my mind starts to argue against this and say, this can't be right. And I get into a panic because, well, what will I do if I don't do what I've always been trained to do? I need to breathe and soften and understand that there is an entirely different way to live life and experience myself and the world around me than I've been taught so far. And I can't know that level of experience with my intellectual mind. I have to be willing to try something else. Guy Finley, in his talk last night, was talking about the Indiana Jones movies. And in one of them, in almost every one, there's this bottomless pit or this cliff where it drops 1,000 feet and you can't, or 3,000 feet and you can't even see the bottom. But in the particular one where the Holy Grail was part of their search, the main character, Indiana Jones, reaches a point where he's fighting for the life of his father, and he ends up on this cliff, and there's this gaping chasm between himself and the thing he needs, the room that holds the chalice that has the elixir of eternal life, the Holy Grail. And he has to find a way across, but there's nothing but this open space and a 3,000-foot drop in front of him. He has to take a step out into what seems like an absolute void. He has to have the willingness to go into this area where he cannot think his way through it. It doesn't make any sense. Guy Finley has a line where he says, we all have wings that only open in midair. We all have potential to be more than we are that we can only experience when we go out into territory that's completely unknown, where we have no idea how we're going to survive or get through it. We just go because we know if we stay where we are, nothing grows, nothing changes. Everything starts to decay and die if we don't change, if we don't grow. So all of these things are feeding together to give us, to give our intellectual mind a sense of why it might be okay and why it might even be preferable to walk into midair not knowing if we're going to fall, get hurt, make progress, etc. In Lesson 18, as I was reviewing it yesterday, the last section we read was one titled, Your One Function is to Bless Creation. And there is nothing in my training as a logical, rational person in the Western world that could make any sense of that. What does that mean? My one function is to bless creation. So this is a whole new realm of a way to interact with the world that seems to be so solid and physical and logical. And yeah, I can go about the day and I can get up in the morning and I've got my to-do list with 187,000 things that are listed and what I need to do today in order to be productive or a valuable person or worth anything or make them enough money or whatever. I can do that. There are people all over the planet that are doing that. Some of them are amassing tens of dollars. Some of them are amassing hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. Today, even people amassing billions of dollars with that conscious, logical approach in the physical realm, etc. This book is saying, you know what? You can do that, But there's also another way, to be in this world without being of this world, to tap into a level of energies, a level of intelligences, a level of intuitions and creativities and guidances that you can't get to with your conscious logical mind. So the last section was talking about how your one function is to bless creation. And the process of it is contained in the title of this lesson, which is the highest work is embracing, so accepting, and forgiving your past. And by forgiving, we mean dismantling all of my thoughts about my past, especially the judgments, the labels, the evaluations, the bad versus good. Just let it all go and embrace it as it is. And the next segment is titled Cultivating This Practice of Blessing the World. And the text reads, as you choose to truly practice being the presence of Christ, as you cultivate the practice of blessing the world, you will discover a very interesting thing. You will swear that many of the thoughts, or what seem to be experiences or emotions that are passing through your screen of awareness, they don't seem to have any causal link to anything you've experienced in your current lifetime. You are going to be opening yourself to a level of experience outside that mechanical level of thought and consciousness and churning my memories and evaluating the current situation based on data inputs from my senses and comparing it to the past. You're going to get other input. You're going to be aware and awake and tuned into and start to experience things other than just your conscious logical thought. The text goes on and says, for those of you that have done the inner work necessary to create a transparency of the barrier between lifetimes, you will not even necessarily find a causal link between the world you're experiencing today, the creation that's passing through the field of your awareness, and anything you've ever experienced as a unique ray of light. This is, they're saying, as a previous incarnation, as one of the many lifetimes that some people have experienced that they've had. The text goes on and asks, why is this important? The answer is simply because the human mind tends to take the whole process of awakening far too personally. In reality, there is nothing that is personal. What you think is personal is your dream of separation solidified into and codified into a set of thoughts and beliefs and strictures and structures of your own thought and judgments about right, wrong, good, or bad. It's all in the fantasy that you're separate from the world and the people around you. In reality, there is nothing that is personal. This is why people like Joseph S. Benner wrote a book like The Impersonal Life. You can find that book and read it at christmind.info, christmind.info. If you want to dive a little deeper, go to that website. You can find a copy of the book somewhere online or at a bookstore, but it's available free at christmind.info. And you may not read the whole thing, but you can get a gist of it if you read the first few chapters. We are just sparks of the one divine mind. We are part of a whole that goes beyond our ability to comprehend. And this thing that we use as mind energy within the confines of thought to judge this and that and to say this is me and that's you and we're different and I'm better or I'm worse, or that's the personal stuff, and it's all made up, just like all language is made up, just like all comparisons are made up. It's an illusion. It's what Einstein would call an optical delusion that lets you experience yourself as being something other than part of this universal flow of energy. The text goes on. It says, why is this important? Simply because the human mind tends to take the whole process of awakening far too personally. In reality, there is nothing that is personal. There is only Christ as creation's true and only creation. And the field of illusion that has been birthed through the freedom of that one mind, when it once thought, quote, I wonder if I can create something unlike the rest of creation, close quotes. Those are the only two options, love or fear, reality, what actually is, or illusion. In Dr. Michael Rice's work, he talks about the reality is the illusion, and all of us create our own reality. All of us create our own version of actuality, and actuality is the real world. Actuality is an energy field within an energy field within an energy field ad infinitum. It just infinitely goes on. There's everything is part of something else. All is part of the whole. There are only these flows of energy, and no energy is separate. And then, of course, there's the mind energy that can create the experience of being separate when no separation exists. Illusion, hallucination, dream. The text again says, those are the only two options, love or fear. Actuality, in Michael Rice's words, reality, in the Way of Mastery's words, or illusion, which is what Michael Rice calls reality, the personal reality, the pictures your mind shows you. Therefore, all that you see that is unlike love are merely passing phenomena. They are arising within the mind of Christ as a temporary attempt to do something different than what Christ was created for. Therefore, when anything arises within the mind, it is truly not necessary to analyze it. Certainly, do not argue for it, but rather come back to the point of ignorance. Now, notice the Western mind and what it wants to do here. Instead of the childlike curiosity that says, wow, this is amazing. Look at how much anger I'm generating right now. I have no idea how I'm generating this anger. Let me ask, how am I making this emotion of anger appear? Instead of that, instead of moving into ignorance and asking to be shown, we argue for our hurt, our anger, our confusion. And we're invited very strongly here, do not argue for it, but rather come back to the point of ignorance. Here's a suggested couple of statements in a quote. Quote, I do not know what this thought or this image or this emotion or this memory is for. But I do know one thing. I have made a commitment to reawaken as Christ. Therefore, I will use this one moment, this one thought, this one passing phenomenon, to practice what I was created for, to bless creation and thereby transform it into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful, infinitely, eternally, with joy, with innocence, with graciousness, with peace, and with marvel at the great mystery that love is, that creation is. close quotes. As you come to truly understand how simple your task is, your burden will become lighter, for you will discover that you cannot help but be in the right place at the right time. Those committed to awakening to creation recognize the great gift of each moment with statements like the following, quote, here is creation's will right before me. This is the moment that is crying for love, close quote. This is the moment that will be repeated ad nauseum until somebody, might as well be you, decides to bless it. Creation waits upon your welcome by merely holding the thought within your mind, quote, all right, it's all arising within me anyway. I've tried a million ways to avoid it and get away from it, and yet it seems to follow me wherever I go. I might as well sit down on the park bench, have a nice cold glass of water, listen to the birds sing, and simply bless creation, close quotes. Now, many of you are not yet to the point of truly transcending and creating or creating the transparency of what you've called your personal stuff. That stuff which makes up the I within your phenomenal world. That is fine. As you simply practice blessing the world as it arises in your awareness, that very sense of I am this and I am that, becomes increasingly transparent until it simply dissolves away in light, as though it had never been. Because in truth, it has never been anywhere but in your mind or the mind of somebody else who has been accumulating thoughts and judgments and patterns of observation about you. But that's the only place it exists. Outside the mind of the human, there is just the flow of creation. There is just the expansion of the creative energy that some would call love. In the meantime, the text goes on and says, in the meantime, come back to what we shared earlier. Time is given to you that you might use it constructively. Therefore, do not seek to trample what you call the ego or the sense of personal self. It's simply there. It is what is arising. Are you willing to bless it? Are you, as a soul, already dreaming the dream of separation? I'll correct that. I read that incorrectly. As you, as a soul, who are already dreaming the dream of separation, as you began to create the phenomena of what you perceive to be separate lifetimes, falling into the condensation or the density of physicality, we have shared with you that patterns began to settle into the nervous system of the body and the mind. Belief systems, not yours, but rather coming from the field of the parents or of the culture, and the time frame into which you incarnated, they literally imprinted themselves within the mind and within the literal nervous system of the body. These are cellular imprints. Your creation waits on your welcome. Therefore, can you turn back to the body-mind? Can you turn back to your very memories that seem to be associated with an individual self within a personal history? And rather than trying to pretend that it is not there, simply recognize it if that is what you're perceiving of yourself, and then bring love to that. Stop trying to shake the ego off as though you could shake the hand right off the end of your arm. As your egoic thoughts arise, as your anger, as your anxiety, as your fear arises, and you begin to recognize, oh, this is a pattern of thought I have been playing thousands of times in this lifetime alone. It comes from my parents. It comes from my culture. It comes from the misuse of my conscious logical mind. I will just bless it. I will allow it, surrender into it, breathe into it, rather than trying to get rid of it, rather than saying, this isn't me, and I didn't do that, and this is being done to me by the outside world. It's a creation of your use of your own mind energy. That's why I'm going back to the last paragraph I read. It says, your creation waits on your welcome. What's your creation? Your egoic thoughts about yourself are your creation. Your sense of self, your ego, your pattern of judgment, your hopes, your fears, your angers, your hurts, your confusion, they are your creation. Your creation waits on your welcome. Therefore, can you turn back to the body-mind? Can you turn back to your very memories that seem to be associated with an individual self, with a personal history? And rather than trying to pretend that it's not there or judge it as bad or wrong, simply recognize if that is how you are perceiving yourself, and then bring love to that, acceptance to that, allowance to that, surrender to that. Stop trying to shake the ego off as though you could shake the hand off of your arm. The next paragraph says, those that choose to turn back and look upon their experience with the singular field of the one body-mind arising from the moment of conception unto the present of where you find yourself at whatever age you are, those who are doing that are already engaged in the highest work of Christ. Those who turn back and look upon their experience with allowance, with acceptance, with surrender, they are already engaged in the highest work of Christ. For they are choosing to turn back and embrace creation, their own creation, by looking upon ancient memories and no longer fearing them, but allowing them to be brought into awareness by whatever means, so that that memory can be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. Remember, a couple segments ago it said, your function, your one function is to bless creation. Now it's saying, please understand, everything you've ever done with your conscious logical mind, with the power of creation contained in your human thought, has been your creation. So we want to bless that too. We want to allow it, accept it, surrender to it, ask to be taught by it. And as I do that, as I turn back and embrace creation by looking upon ancient memories, releasing any fear that comes up about them, understanding that I'm the one creating the fear about them, releasing any anger about them, understanding that I'm the one creating the anger about them, I allow them to be brought into awareness by whatever means, so that those memories, those judgments, those experiences can be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. The text goes on and says, beloved friends, looking backwards into time, into your seemingly personal experience, can seem horrifying. I say unto you, the sense of horror that many of you feel is not linked to the memories themselves. It is only linked to what you have decided to believe about the memory and nothing else. This is right out of Diedrich Wolzak's work, the power of Diedrich Wolzak's six-step forgiveness process. Is he says, look, we go back, we tap into these memories, we recognize that we don't like how we're feeling, and then instead of running away from this negative feeling we're having, we accept it, we're going to do some work on it. So then I start asking myself, okay, what is the emotion I'm feeling right now? And the next step is I ask, is this emotion familiar? Have I felt this before? And he says, it'll always be familiar, because by the time you're 6 or 7 years old, you've already experienced every emotion you'll ever have in your life. So this is an echo of an emotion. And then once you recognize that it's a familiar emotion, you start asking yourself, when's one of the earliest times that I remember experiencing this vibration of energy that I'm calling emotion? And then the next step is I go back and I notice what bubbles up, what pops into my mind, what associations happen. And I see, how old am I, where am I, who else is there, and what's happening. And I look at that dynamic, and now I take my adult self back into a visualization with my younger self, whatever age, my 20s, my teens, my single digits, early single digits, whatever. And I ask that younger version of myself, as I visualize going through this memory, which is one of the first times where I had that negative emotion of this specific vibrational flavor, I ask my younger self, as I look at the dynamic that was happening, I ask my younger self, what did you make this mean about you, Tim, the younger Tim? Because that's the thing, the meaning that I took from that is the thing that's giving it the impact it's having in my life all of these years or decades later. The actual event hasn't occurred in years or decades, so the actual event is not creating a disruption in my life. Yet the emotional energy and the belief system, the thought structure that I keep pouring my mind energy into about how this means I was weak, I was damaged, I was broken, I deserve to be punished, whatever that negative judgment is, that's what's creating the negative experience in my adult life. That's exactly what this portion of Lesson 18 is talking about. Those people that choose to turn back and look upon their experience within this singular field of the one body mind arising from the moment of conception to the present of where you find yourself at whatever age you are. If you're doing that work, you're already engaged in the highest work of Christ, because you're turning to choose, you're choosing to turn back and embrace creation without judging it, but just to understand it. Look at it, question it, understand it, see what you've made it mean. And you release your fear about it. You release your anger about it. You allow these memories to be brought into awareness by whatever means, so that that memory can be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. I see, as a 60-some-year-old, that what I believed about myself when I was 5 years old that was negative was just an error in thought. And it begins to be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. The text goes on and says, "Beloved friends, looking backwards into time, into your seemingly personal experience, can seem horrifying. Yet I say unto you that the sense of horror that many of you feel is not linked to the memories itself. It is only linked to what you've decided to believe about the memory and nothing else. So begin then by forgiving yourself your past." What does that mean? By dismantling the false perceptions you've downloaded about your past, the judgments that are negative about your past. Dismantle them. Move into that state that says, "I don't know if this is right or wrong, good or bad. I don't know what any of this is or is for. I just remember it happening, and I remember myself thinking this, and when I thought that, I felt these negative emotions, and I'm ready to let go of that. I don't want to keep thinking that same pattern of thoughts and pouring my mind energy into it, creating more of the tension. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to ask to be shown a different way to look at this. I'm going to release my attachment to my beliefs about the meaning of these events that I experienced." So begin by forgiving yourself your past. In other words, releasing, dismantling your perceptions about your past, especially when they're negative. Look upon the objects, just as we did with the initial meditation or exercise. Look upon the objects and the memories of your past and say within your mind, quote, I forgive you, meaning I dismantle my judgments about you. I dismantle my perceptions about you. I'm willing to see you in an entirely new way, different, transformed. You are perfectly neutral. I choose now to remember you, to remember you, to take you back into me as a part of the wholeness of life and the flow of life experience, to embrace again that I might bless you. I'm saying this to my memories, memories that might have been interpreted by me as being bad or wrong or traumatic. I'm saying it from a completely neutral, loving, accepting, embracing space. The text goes on and says, with that blessing, release the terror, release the hurt, release the judgment, release the fear, release the incredible dramas that you seem to have dreamt. By releasing that burden of illusion, that memory becomes as a crystal, as a gem given unto you as part of an infinite journey that seems to be yours, but truly belongs to everyone, now transformed and purified because you brought Christ mind to the illusion, so that creation might be transformed. Can you, will you be willing? We know you can. This is given to us as these deep spiritual teachings. This can be done. This has been done by others. There have been people leading the way. It will be done by others. So you can do this. The question is, will you? Do you have the willingness? Can you generate the willingness, even as small as a mustard seed? Because if you do, starting there, it will build momentum like a stone rolling down the hill. Are you going to be willing to let yourself remember with this active process of forgiveness, which means to dismantle every judgment, dismantle every perception, especially the negative ones, and welcome it as a flow of life experience with the understanding that all of the negative emotions that I experience around it are self-induced nonsense. That's what the word sin, that's my favorite acronym for the word sin. It's energy that's off the mark, and I'm the one that has the capacity to change the focus of that conscious, logical mind energy and therefore change what it means to me and how it feels to me and what the experience of life is that I generate moment to moment. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. That's all we're going to read for today. This is a Friday. We'll be back again on Monday. We have about 5 minutes left for comments or questions if anybody wants to do that. I will invite that as I look to my phone to figure out what audio I'm going to play for Michael and Jeannie, who are otherwise occupied today. It is called The Power Person Dynamics, Part 1. And so that's going to be the second hour today. It's going to be a recording. And if you're with us and you'd like to make a comment or a question about the reading so far today or anything that's happened all week, we have about 5 minutes, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and I'll turn on your microphone, and we can have a short time of conversation. If that doesn't happen, I'm content to breathe into this and wish you all a lovely weekend. I'll remind people that I did make good on my commitment to record and upload the reality management worksheet forgiveness pattern on the mindshiftersacademy.org website. It's under the educational materials page. The written version, or a version, has been up there for quite a while written, and now there's an audio version available for download or listening. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, Celinda here.
Welcome.
Yes, as you were reading and mentioning, reading from the text where it keeps saying to ask the question, and your comments about asking the question, I suddenly made a connection between the innocent, the holy innocence, the divine innocence of the child, the divine ignorance and innocence of the child. And when I was thinking of a tiny child, I was thinking of when they start asking questions, and how often we as parents feel the little child wants to know, so it keeps asking these questions constantly, probably about 2 or 3, I don't know, I can't remember. But sometimes the parents just get so tired. When will this child quit asking so many questions? Why is this this way? What is that? Where are we? All of those questions that a tiny child asks. And it made me chuckle because I was thinking the holy innocence of the and the holy ignorance of the tiny child, and that's what the text seems to be saying here. Keep asking.
Yes. Yes. Move into the innocence. Move into the direct observation about how little we do know. Move into the awareness that the intellectual part of our mind is a very, very simple tool with very, very limited use. It's not our true nature. It's not our essence.
And before we leave, would you remind me or tell me again, Dietrich Woolworth's, and I don't know how to pronounce spell his name, but the name of the book.
W-O-L-S-A-K. You can go to his website. choose-again.com. Choose, C-H-O-O-S-E, hyphen, A-G-A-I-N.com.
Hyphen is a little slash line, right?
A dash.
Yeah, a little dash, tiny dash. Okay. And that's his 6 steps is on there?
The Choose Again Transform Your Life website, yep. And if for whatever reason they're hiding it these days, let me know and I can send you the PDF that I downloaded a couple of years ago off that website when he was putting it out there for free. He puts a lot of good stuff out there for free, and you can sign up for the email and they'll send you daily nuggets, but it's a 6-step process. It's very similar to Dr. Michael Rice's 7-step worksheet. And there's an interview that I did with him that's available on the On Your Mind podcast. And you can get to the On Your Mind podcast. That's called On Your Mind podcast.org. So.
That's what you used with me last night in the worksheet. I remember you asking those questions.
The forgiveness pattern, which is also available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website under the educational materials tab. But Dietrich Woolzack is not the only one to think about when this might have happened to you earlier and going back, and that's part of several different trauma techniques. That's part of body journaling and holographic memory processing, and the list goes on. Because this is just, okay. It's very solid knowledge that we are carrying around within us all of the beliefs and the mind energy that create our experience of life. So I'm going to cut you off so we can get Michael and Jeannie's tapes thing going. Blessings. Thank you for the call, Celinda. Remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Everything else is false. And this is the second hour, the Power Person Dynamic, Part 1.
Will you briefly just go through, I've heard it quite a few times, but the levels of the power person, like I know that the final one is I resort to what they resort to, like in terms of my dad, it's hostility and rage. But what are the first two again?
Okay. Well, let's just kind of lay out, because I don't know if everybody has been through the power person thing yet. So I'm just going to do a brief layup to that, and then we'll answer that question.
Okay.
We define a power person in this work by three things having occurred in someone's life. If you are the subject of the power person's activity and behavior, here are the three components that will turn that experience with that person into a power person dynamic in your mind. One, that person had more power over your life than you did. It's usually apparent, though not always. I worked with a man a couple of years ago, and he was up in his, I don't remember, 60s, 70s, and he was in a store that was robbed, and he thought he was going to be shot. And he was running that power person dynamic like almost full time. It was such a trauma for him. So it isn't always a child and a power person or an adult, a parent, but oftentimes that's it. So they had more power in their lives than you did. They were not functioning as a human being. They were not functioning out of love. And then the third dynamic is the object of that situation perceived it as survival. When those three things occur, the object, the child in this case, their energy field opens wide like a sponge and literally just gathers in, sucks in every energy in the environment. If there's rage and there's fear and there's hatred and there's violence, there's vicious language and whatever, all of that is just brought into the energy field of the object of that situation. In the future, until that power person dynamic is realized and resolved, and my offering is the whole planet is run by this, because this particular piece of information has not been available on planet Earth until this work was synthesized. I've never heard this power person dynamic anywhere else in any form of psychology I've studied or psychiatry or theology or anything else. So my offering is literally everything in the world, every business, every government, every family, every church, they're all run by the power person dynamics in the individuals involved. As long as that is power person dynamic is unconscious and has not been resolved, there are only three behaviors possible for a person to do. And the level of stress they're under will determine through what we call the automatic decision system, which behavior is going to run that person's mouth and life. The thing that determines which one's going to run it, again, is the stress that they're under. So when there's little or no stress, what runs virtually everybody's mind is the behaviors they did to get along with their power person, to interact with their power person. So let's say, you know, my power person's a funny person and they commits a lot. And so my interaction with them, I become a funny person. I become an easygoing, fun, let's have fun type of person. No stress, that's what's done. Stress starts to build. I'll shift out of that. And this is oftentimes something that shockingly comes out in a marriage. Because when stress starts to build, that the next behavior that the mind goes into, the automatic decision kicks into, is now I do whatever I did to resist and survive with my power person. So let's say I meet someone, we have a great time together, we've got matching bags of garbage, we enjoy each other's company, and we decide to marry. And things are rocking and wonderful, and there's never been any great stress involved. But one day, you know, the mortgage has to be paid, and the baby has to be fed, and the stress starts to build. If what I did to get along with my, or to resist and survive with my power person was to become snarky with them, all of a sudden, you know, maybe this person's been married to me for 5 years, has never seen me snarky, and all of a sudden goes, wait a minute, who am I married to? What happened here? I thought you were Mr. Nice Guy or Ms. Nice Guy. Snarky kicks in. Once the stress has gone down, that person will go back to their, what did they do to get along with their power person? And then the third level is, or the third behavior, is when one becomes ultra-stressed. And when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. Ginny and I were in Florida a few years back, and we did a workshop at the invitation of a man who was in his 60s. He ran an online AA support group that he'd been doing for 25 or 30 years. He'd been sober 30 plus years. And he asked if I'd do this workshop, which I did. And when I came to this part, he was like, well, Michael, I know that simply isn't true. I've been sober for over 30 years. And, you know, when I was a kid, my father was very abusive and hit me brutally all the time. And he said, I brought up my son and I never touched him once. And he was kind of in that, you know, kind of a hard place of, so that's wrong. I said, well, okay, I hear you. I understand. But let me ask a question. How much time do you still spend today having to control your fists? And it was like I could have knocked him over with a feather, because it was just like, oh my God, I still have to keep from hitting people. This guy's in his 60s, has been sober for 30 years, and he still wants to hit. He's had enough self-control, especially with a child, to never hit them. But power person dynamics still running in his mind. So three behaviors. No stress, you do what you did to get along. Stress starts to build, you do what you did to resist and survive. Become ultra-stressed, you do what your power person did to you that you hated the most. And most people, when they do that, have no awareness that they're doing what their power person did to them that they hated the most. Because when the mind, you know, what happens is, remember, all that energy dynamic from the power person has been sucked in. And let's say the power person was a rager, so there's all this rage. Now this person's ultra-stressed, and they just go raging, but their perceptual construct doesn't say to them, look, you're raging. Their perceptual construct says, this is what I do to win and protect myself. So when somebody says, why are you raging at me? They'll say, what do you mean raging you? I'm not raging you. All I was doing was protecting myself. Mind gives it a whole different label, so it looks different. But mark my words, ultra-stressed, until you've gone in and resolved this in the unconscious mind, you will do what your power person did to you that you hated the most, or at least you'll be inclined to do it. If you've got some modicum of self-control, you might not, but it runs the world. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. Brief follow-up. In the middle one, where you said, you know, with some stress, I might respond with some kind of snarky remark. Would that also be
whatever
where
I did to resist and survive?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just use snarky as an example. It might be, mm-hmm. you know, what the response might be under when stress starts to build, might be to go and hide.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Withdraw. Okay.
Withdraw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Is that power person dynamic explanation fit for everybody? Any questions on it? Is everybody breathing as I describe it?
A comment in the chat room was, it's like a dry drunk. The behavior has been corrected superficially, but the issue has not been addressed and healed.
The external, yeah. Yep. Same dynamic as the dry drunk. So is that fitting? Any questions about that power person dynamic? And the idea of the power person worksheet, as you fill out every detail, when you can, remember, one of the key things in this process is to be able to step back from the operation of your own mind, to become the thinker apart from the thoughts, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. It's going to be really difficult to identify what's running the show if you're locked into it like that. So the power person worksheet, its purpose, with all of the fine detail as you identify, oh, this is to allow you to step back and go, oh, that's what my mind is. Oh, I see. Oh, I got it. Now that I can hold it, and I can hold it in love, and I know how to forgive, I can drop into the root of it. I can drop into the experience that happened maybe when I was 2 with my power person. And I can process out the energy behind it so it no longer is an instant reaction that takes over. And remember, we define processing as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So making the space for everything that's in there, for every power person interaction to come to the surface, to be able to embrace it and to move through it. Does that fit for everybody and make sense? And I thank the collective energy of the last group in that intensive, that one particular Sunday afternoon, because the next morning it was just like, woke into here's the next worksheet to enhance and take things forward. And this worksheet we are keeping within the intensive. It's such a core piece of the intensive. You know, all of our other worksheets, it's like, here, let's put them out there. But without the intensive, it's not going to make a lot of sense or be that functional for people. So we're just using it in the context. It's not on the website for anybody to download. We're using the context of the intensive.
Question?
Go for it.
In event, I had this painter, and he started to get irritated. Don't know what the trigger was. And he started raising his voice and everything. Now, he is love. He is innocent. I am love. I am innocent. Nevertheless, my middle name is not Matt. It is not Doormat.
Doormat, right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel that I have to stay in his presence when he is acting out. I would just simply say, time out. I remove myself. We both take time out, and then we come together again. Right. But love is nevertheless present in both of us. But I don't have to stay be a doormat, correct?
Right. Absolutely. This is no way, shape, or form is anybody being invited and doing this work.
Right.
A doormat is quite the opposite. You'll become quite verbal. And as we get to the communication piece of it, that might be the space where you take out the communication worksheet and do some responsibility communication with him, rather than just, well, we're just going to separate and wait for it to happen again. That might be the space to come together and say, you know, I noticed that we're talking about a particular dynamic, and it looks to me like your stress goes up, and all of a sudden your voice goes up 3 octaves, and I find that you're shouting. At least that's how it looks to me. And what happens for me when that takes place is fear comes up in me, and what I want to do is heal my fear. Would you support me in that? Now, we've had people, I remember we had one woman who bought a loan. This was a woman in a little town south of Springfield, Missouri. And she bought a lawnmower from Sears. And the lawnmower was delivered by 2 guys in a pickup truck. And getting off the pickup truck, they damaged it. So she called Sears and said, I need the mower replaced. They've damaged it. So they brought a new mower. And they damaged it again. She called in and spoke to the manager of the department. And she got a letter from the manager of the Sears service department complimenting on her on how she communicated about what happened and how much he had learned about dealing with people through her using responsibility communication. So, you know, you might take it to the next level in that interaction. And you might not, just, you know, as a suggestion, a possibility.
Thank you. I had an interaction with a builder, and we went, I went into his company, and he had this long table. He had five employees there, and I was making my presentation, and he had said to me, he said, you are making me mad. And I looked at him, and I said, I'm not doing anything. If anybody's making me mad, you might want to think if you're making yourself mad.
And how did he receive that?
I'm sorry?
How did he receive that?
Perfect. He went calm. It changed. It cleared. It was like a fog that was lifted.
Nice.
And then we went on from there. It was perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. Accountability is a powerful thing to offer people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a question in chat room, and then Yurata's hand is up. The question is, do people have more than one power person? And if so, do they behave differently depending on which power person comes through?
You can have multiple power persons. Let's say, for instance, in one arena, you know, maybe the person who did all kinds of outrageous things was mom because she controlled money. And when money issues came up, she went berserk. So maybe in regard to money issues, mom is your power person. And maybe in regard to, you know, getting homework done, dad was the power person. You know, so you can have as many power persons as there are issues in the world. The way you tell who your key power person is in any given situation is you look at whose behavior you do when you become ultra stressed. That will point right to the power person. Jeannie, you've got an interesting story in that regard. Maybe you want to share it?
Sure. You know, I always thought that my mom was my power person. And because she was like the disciplinarian, you know, and she was always the one that would give you the voice or the look or whatever. And but then what I realized was my ultimate, what I want to do when I'm ultimate stress is just out the roof is I want to leave. Well, my mom never left, but dad would go to the farm. Now, he had the excuse of going and working the farm and working the cows and doing all those things. And I realized that in that respect, that he was my power person. It was like to leave to be able to survive the stress that was in the house. And he's one of the gentlest, kindest. I mean, you know, we've been taking care of him for 2 years. I mean, he is just a very gentle soul.
And in 2 years, there hasn't been a crossword pass around him.
Your power person isn't necessarily somebody who rages and is mean and, you know, hateful and all of that. But it's whose behavior do you do to survive a situation? And so it might be a very calm gentle person, but if they're not doing it from a loving space, then, you know, it's still a behavior that you'll pick up as this is what I need to do to survive.
And basically what happens is, you know, we have this whole database and, you know, our power person, especially when it's a parent, you know, is kind of like a god. So when I don't know what to do, I'm under ultra extreme stress, what do? I look into my unconscious database and I say, what did God do in order to win over me? In other words, what did my power person do in order to keep me in check or keep me in control or whatever the game was? And that's where I'll gather that advice. Oh, that's what I need to do. And with that thing that Jeannie just shared when she first opened that up, you know, there was a time when mom was pretty abusive. And when dad would leave, the thinking was, why is he leaving me alone here with this? And that was the survival component. It's like, can I survive this? So yeah, there can be many power persons. And again, the key piece of the puzzle is whose behavior do you do when you're ultra stressed? That'll point you right to your power person.
So,
does that make sense, Urate? Any other thoughts?
Well, Urate hadn't asked a question yet. That was out of the chat room. But Urate, you're next. Go ahead and unmute.
Hey, you who does an awesome job of doing the food program. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, shoot. I wanted to lower my hand and somehow it just came back up. Well, I wanted to share the same power dynamics too, and a little situation that I'm still trying to untangle myself out of it, and maybe I could use some support to help myself see more clearly, and maybe I can just give myself out in my speech. So please listen to me, because apparently I cannot hear that. I think knowing the work, it's been really super helpful. But at the same time, the situation that I will share about, I put myself, I think just not speaking and acting from my power person's dynamic, which used to be my dad, you know, when my mom used to be the one who is loud and my dad is the one who is kind of draws himself and stays quiet. So when the situation was stressful, I just pulled myself out of the situation and did not deal with it. And that was exactly his behavior too. So I understand that. And the interesting part was the situation, I'll share just briefly about it, what it was happening. It was like, I usually, as a health coach, I love leading programs and I like to like be with the group and be inspiring and supportive and giving tips and just, but I love when people interact back with me. So this time, oppositely, in January, I decided instead of leading the program, I decided to participate in the program that I haven't done for a while. And I thought that would be like amazing thing for me to do, just surrender, be a good participant, be the one how I would like people to participate with me.
Right.
And I did that, you know, so I showed up, you know, I did all the requirements, I checked in everywhere, you know, all the things that she would ask us to share, you know, I would actively share. And this is just who I am, you know, and I love it, and I love to arrange my foods, and I like my plates to look pretty, you know, and I put them out there. And then, you know, probably on day like 7, you know, my coach, you know, who was leading the program, writes this message. And I will tell you how I perceive that. The message says, those of you that know me, and that's her, that know me well, know that I am not a fan of complicated recipes or people too, LOL. Nor do I create food porn pictures with a perfect lighting and the like. I don't want to give the idea that you have to live this perfect life to do what is the best for you. So all that was to get you out of your head in case you were there and share my poorly lighted but delicious one pot dinner. And it's just like, I definitely took that personally. I was like, okay, I was the only one posting it. Like, how can I not take it personally? And I was like, I took it back and I was like, oh, I overstepped. So I was like, I don't have to share that much, you know, like, I guess I can just share a little bit. And I started sharing very little pieces. Sometimes, like, I was holding myself back, who I am, and just, like, writing things instead of posting my picture. And then, you know, I was like, well, maybe I just need to do my more work. And I was busy, so I didn't get to, like, do my worksheet. So, and by the time, you know, the program finished, you know, I was like, well, I still feel like I held myself back. I did not participate in the program the way I wanted. So I definitely betrayed it myself. And I was the one who could have just spoken back and say, well, I hope I didn't mean to offend anybody with this, you know, of posting. Like, that was not my intention of, like, making anyone feel less. And yes, you don't have to make a perfect picture, you know, to eat healthy. That's true. So I felt like I hurt myself by holding myself back.
So what was it like when your power person withheld and didn't do their best? When you knew that your power person had more to give and they didn't, how did that feel?
Now I can't really pinpoint with anything.
Well, here would be my thinking on that. It sounds like in response to what appeared to be a criticism aimed at you,
right?
You took it as a personal criticism and
right.
that you were supposed to be or do less. Did you ever watch your power person being or doing less in someone else's presence?
I've definitely seen, you know, I think my mom, you know, used to be very judgmental. So my dad, I think, always walked like on the eggshells, you know, make sure he doesn't do something that it would not be approved by mom.
So would you classify yourself as walking on eggshells when you didn't?
I did.
Okay. So there's your power person dynamic.
Yeah.
Now, the alternative to that, if there weren't a power person dynamic, would have been, hey, you know, I understand how, you know, you're busy. Gee, you're writing this whole class. Thank you. It's wonderful. And I understand that there's not time for lighting and all that. But you know something? I love photography and I love food photography. So I'm just going to share it to the max. When you do that, you'll be out of your power person dynamic. But under that stress of what appeared to be personal attack and criticism, you reverted back to the eggshells you watched your power person walk on.
Yeah.
As you forgive that, then next time, cancel the thought, but should something like happen, it'll be, well, that's okay that you don't do that, but, you know, and it's okay that I do, and I'm going to keep rocking with it.
Right. I definitely made myself be small to fit in the group. And then I felt like I betrayed myself. And I was trying to overanalyze to say, oh, but I'm like, I would like to protect her. I don't want her to feel like she's not doing. I was like overanalyzing, like I was trying to figure it out.
You can't figure it out, but you can forgive it.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. So thank you. It does really ring the shell, walking on the eggshells around it. And I'm working on the, like, actually did more work and ready to present, like, as a letter to her, you know, more like, I actually would like to talk and maybe have a more like a clearing with her.
Yeah.
About it.
Be a perfect place to do responsibility communication.
Yes. So thank you.
Awesome. Nice work. Nice willingness. You know, it's like no matter how complex a situation is, it can always be reduced. When there's some form of hostility or fear-based behavior happening, it can always be reduced to a power person dynamic. And when you can see that, again, when you can step back from your mind and see that, then you can take the underlying energetic dynamics. I mean, think about the child who is subject to this just crazy, intense rage of an angry power person. And they go around raging all over the place. You know, you might think about, you know, like somebody who might be in the White House or something doing that. Raging at everything and everybody. There's so much pain inside of a structure that's doing that sort of behavior. And so the idea would be to step into the forgiveness process and whatever the goal is that's involved, cancel it, collapse, and let oneself go in and embrace that pain. You know, how did it feel for you, Urate, when you, and I'll use slightly different words, but when you watched your father sell out his best and make himself small, give away the truth of, how did it feel to watch him do that?
It was painful.
Yeah. So that pain is your pain, and that's what you want to be forgiving. And that will be part of undoing that power person dynamic in you.
Thank you. And it was really helpful to hear the feedback because it felt very practical, like how, and I like as what I, because I froze, like I totally froze, and like I was overthinking. And I think that last time when we were on Tuesday night, you know, that's why I spoke into, like, commented on Audrey's, you know, respond back, because she spoke into it. She's like, this is who I am, and this is how I'm going to live, and this is breaking the dynamic. That's what I understand. Like, and I think I was admiring that, because this is what I wanted to be able to be in that place and say, but this is who I am, you know, and if somebody perceived it in a different way, you know, that's their work to do.
And there's usually a thought disorder in there somewhere along the lines of, and this is one of the first ones that takes people out of enthusiasm. You know, if you look at that word enthusiasm, yeah. You look at the child, you know, a two-year-old can get very excited about painting on the walls with what's in their diaper. They're very enthusiastic. It doesn't matter what it is. And what happens is, somebody who's got control of the child delivers a message that there's something broken about them. There's something wrong with them. And that first thought disorder takes the child out of, in theos means literally in God. In theos is God. So it's enthusiasm is that aliveness is gone. And when the child loses that, then the child goes into pain. And that's when the child is usually given their next thought disorder. And that is, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to cry like that and be sad. Just stop it. And the next thought disorder comes along, and the child's like, I'm not even allowed to feel. And there's a whole series of thought disorders that tend to take us into weakness and disintegration. And so what we want to do is become cognizant of those thought disorders. Again, become the thinker apart from the thought, the actor apart from the actions. That's what that six-page codependent or power person worksheet is about. It's putting every little aspect of that down so you can go, oh, now I see it. And you can bring that forward in the presence of love and let go of every thought disorder keyed into it or associated with it. And just be finished with the power person dynamic. Then you get to be a human being, you know, functioning out of love, coming into this form, incarnating in the world, and expressing as who you are, which is what we're designed for. But when there are those thought disorders that are highly emotionally charged, being wants to come in, up comes one of those painful thought disorders, tends to just shut the mouth of the being. And so those non-being dynamics ultimately must be dissolved in order for being to fully incarnate and express in the world as we're designed to.
Yeah, it really fits, you know, that I wanted to be nice and I wanted to please, you know, and
that was doing with mom.
Oh, and knowing that, you know, and like knowing the work and understanding, and I just like, I was almost frozen. I couldn't make a move.
Is your dad still in his body?
No.
Well, you might go in and have a conversation with him and talk to him about what you've discovered just internally, and you might be able to help him to release that.
Thank you.
Acknowledge him for who you saw he was and how he played small, and that, you know, you're there to support him really expressing and allowing the healing to occur, even if mom goes berserk. Okay, so that'll be mom's healing. You know, again, we have this beautiful thing that happens is we tend to come together through resonance with people who have matching bags of garbage. And each one gives the other the opportunity to do their work. The person who stands in willingness goes, oh, I have some work to do here. The person who stands in unwillingness goes, look what's wrong with you. You have some work to do. So to be able to embrace all of those dynamics and do it in the presence of love. And if you can't, that's what we're here for. That's what this whole support process is about, is to create a community of people that are here to hold the space and hold you in the space when those overwhelming dynamics come that seem like, well, this could never be healed. Yes, it can. It's just an energetic dynamic, you know. Maybe it's gone on for 100 generations of the bloodline, so it might take some time to undo, but all of it, everything based in hostility or fear can be removed from this carbon-based memory system. and we can live free of it. That's when real human life begins.
Right,
go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says, he didn't say I come to bring you doctrine or dogma. He says, I come to bring you life. And his whole body of work is about discovering that life, bringing that life into full expression, and moving everything out of carbon-based memory that blocks or inhibits that real, true life from coming through. Go ahead.
Holly, go ahead.
Hey, young man, welcome. How are the worksheets going, Ali? Hit your mute button.
Let me unmute myself.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. I had a question. The worksheet is not going well. It's not the fault of the worksheet. It's me that's not finishing it.
Okay.
But question that came to me was the always power person, basically, from your understanding now, I understood it differently than before. Power person is basically people who are authoritarian people that have authority in your life. Parents, masters, schoolmasters, somebody that has power over you at some point in your life. So that's what you mean by you can have multiple of them.
Yes, and not necessarily having power, but at least your perception was they had the power over you.
Over
so
you, exactly.
More power
you
over your
not,
life
exactly.
than you did.
There, see, I get it.
But they may not be authoritarian, as Jeannie talked about with her dad. I mean, her dad is one of the gentlest souls I've ever seen.
Yeah, what I mean, I don't mean authoritarian in a forceful way. I mean,
right.
At some point in your life, you have the perception they have power over your life.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's what starts the power person dynamic. And then, if I perceive it as survival, that's when literally the energy field just opens wide. It's like a sponge, just sucks every energy in the environment in. Every sensory bit of data. Emotions, not even identified, but the energy of them is drawn in. And that becomes the root of the perceptual output of the mind. And, you know, if you go to the Beatitudes are presented as this nice philosophy. But in Aramaic, the Beatitudes are not a nice philosophy. The Beatitudes are a set of instructions for how to activate a neural structure that the Creator put in you from the beginning. That's designed to be the root of the output of your mind. What's happened is that neural structure has been rendered unconscious by the power person dynamic, and now the power person dynamic becomes the perceptual root of the output of your mind. And that's when all you do is replicate the previous generation's power dynamics, power person dynamics.
Gotcha. And then when the defense are down, you are becoming them.
Yes. You'll do the behaviors that they did that you hated the most. And here's, as I see it, why. I'm looking for, you know, here I am. I'm in confusion. I don't know what to do. I'm lost. I need an advisor. From the unconscious comes a voice that says, I, God, your power person, am down here. Oh,
gotcha.
What do I do now? And that's where I take my advice. It runs the whole world.
And it shows in your life as for sure thing. Because I was watching a program where they were talking about circumcision, female circumcision, which is very common in the part of the world I grew up. So
right.
The TV program was asking this lady, why are you circumcising your daughter? And knowing that it's no faith, there's no basis. She says, because my mom did it to me.
Power person, yep. It's a hard thing to overcome. It takes real conscious work to change those generational.
So you start defending that, even if it was wrong, because it thinks that's something that's yours versus all these ideas that you've recently gained. So it's deeper than all of the other options you've got.
And that's why creating a safe space where it's safe to make different choices becomes a real key in the healing process. Remember, we started out in the first session. You know, we want to create a space of safety so that anybody can access anything that's in there and bring it forward to conscious awareness and begin to work through it.
Got it.
Cool. And I join you in the efforts to change that dynamic in the world, because it is an horrendous one.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
there was a comment in the chat room that she saw her mother like hit her brothers, but she was never hit. But now when she gets ultra stressed, the first thing she wants to do is hit, even though she wasn't hit, but she saw her mother do it to her brothers. So she still took it on that that was a power person and that was survival. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. For her to survive, the threat was, you know, who knows? Am I going to be next? So I better be quiet. And there the energy field opens and just draws it all in.
Okay. And Audrey had sent me a note, said she didn't know how to raise her hand. So you're next, Audrey, if you'll unmute. And then Roma, you're after her.
Okay.
Hey, Audrey, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. When you were talking, and all of a sudden I saw this mother duck with all these baby ducks, and then I'm thinking to myself, what is the word that the mother duck shows baby ducks? That it came to me, imprinting. So on if animals could do that, and we as humans imprint our people, maybe little people, okay, our peeps, and we imprint. And then as we grow up, say the family of origin, if the mother figure or the father figure or the others would imprint the children, then the children would go along and they would have that patterning. Now, when I was in nursing school, I don't know if it was my stuff that was blocked. I felt that they were kind of gatekeepers.
Right.
And I had to maintain a certain GPA. And
right.
I felt somewhat imprinted by them, not them all the time, but maybe one incident. I felt imprinted. But doesn't the imprinting go on with the family of origin and then maybe... I'm going to give an example. Say a priest, and you're a sinner. So that gets imprinted, and it just keeps going on. And then when I'm doing my inner work, how do I know it's my stuff and their? Oh, my stuff and their stuff. It's how I feel. It would be my stuff. Okay. You know, and then I think I listened to your video one time, and I think you would say it takes years to work on this. Did you say that, or did I just hear it and you didn't say it?
Well, it's a process. And my offering would be, as I observe people over the last 50 years of developing this work, in order for somebody to really begin to deeply comprehend what it is we're talking about doing, if they diligently do their work, it takes between 5 and 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
For them to really get the level of actuality that we're talking about.
Right. Because when my son went to boot camp and he came home after boot camp and there was something on the TV, some kind of shooting or the movie, and I looked at him and the first thing that went through my mind was, what did they do to him? I mean, he was not even there. He was just focused on whatever was going on. And I think, like, doesn't the military have to break them down and then they build them up again? So isn't that a form of imprinting?
The, you know, every cult is based in replacing a person's current power person with the power person who's leading the cult, with the person who's doing that. The military is one of the biggest cults on the earth. If you want to see an interesting example of it, and it's a tough movie to watch, watch the movie Straight Metal Jacket or Full Metal Jacket. Full Metal Jacket. Powerful power person dynamic, and you watch it come full circle in that film.
Thank you. So it's a process. You just do your inner work. Just allow it to happen. Just be willing to do the work. Thank you.
There's another interesting film out there. Thank you, Jeannie, for the name of it. It's Russell Crowe in the movie The Water Diviner. And it's a story about a backwoods Australia dirt poor farmer struggling to make life work and teaching his children and, you know, teaching them to be heroes and all of that. And his children grow up, and has no use for war, but his children decide that they have to go off. This is based on a true story, that they have to go off to war. They're young men, you know, 17, 18, 19, whatever. And long story short, two of them get killed. And one of them, the older brother, was there, and the younger brother was mortally wounded, and it would have been, you know, 10 times worse for him to have stayed alive and gone through what was coming from the enemy. And so he begged his brother to shoot him, which he did. And then his brother, with great guilt, wants to punish himself. And it's interesting when you watch the film twice, because you get to go back and watch how this man set his children up to leave home and go to war. And there's a scene in the film where the brother, who, out of compassion and under stress from his other brother begging him to finish him off, to shoot him, which he does, he's finally, his father comes and finds him. You know, they're the military saying, oh, they're gone, they're all dead, you're not going to, but he's going to find their bodies and bring them home. And he finds the brother that's still alive. And the brother is just distraught, you know. It's my fault that my two brothers are dead. And the father says, no, no. This is mine. And it's powerful to watch that once, then go back and watch how he structures his kids to go off and do exactly what they did. And, you know, what we want to do with this work is replace all of that with life. You know, what is a human being? Hold a newborn child. What is the newborn energy? We've asked people, tens of thousands of people all over the globe, and it's always a list similar to this one on the board. What is this being? It is awesome. It is sweet. It is pure, wonderful, a miracle, precious, present, gift, love, and blessing. That's the essence of our human beingness. And if anything else is playing out, it's from over here on the other side of the board. Time to be finished with that dynamic. Forgiveness is the way that's removed.
As we've been imprinted, okay, whether the person who has given us the dynamics, that discordant dynamic, that energy that imprinted us,
right.
Even though they're, I'm going to use the word nonlinear, out of body. Okay, I'm going to use the word nonlinear.
Okay.
But nevertheless, we are always connected. There's no separation. So what I have to do is break that patterning and release, right? I break that and I release it.
It's called forgiveness.
And it's called forgiveness.
Yep.
Let it go. And then as, say, I'm going to say it with my father. As I do it with my father, then it goes all on the line of his lineage, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I do my inner work, I release him because we are tied in that dynamics. Is that the way it's done? I mean, is that the concept?
As you work through that, you open an energy window for your power person to be released too. You know, Magda, in that last intensive, did a powerful piece of work with her grandfather. She took it to a whole other level of, she did her work and then worked with him, even though he wasn't in his body. And so that would be a whole other level of opening that up. And if you haven't listened to, I know you were in that intensive, but for anybody that's in the new intensive, Jeannie, maybe you can go ahead and put it in the codependence page, is the link to that conversation with Magda. It was just such a powerful generational piece of work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Rama, go ahead.
Hey, young lady. Aloha.
Aloha. So there's just one thing I just want to share about the three early memories, is that I think there was a real benefit in putting, because these were three very intense things, but there was a great benefit in putting it on one piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
For me, because about 2 minutes after I finished filling out the entire paper with all three of those things, I got a really strong hit of what a strong will to survive I have.
Huh?
After having witnessed and gone through those experiences again. So that was the benefit. I just wanted to share with you that was the benefit of having all those things on one piece of paper.
Yeah. Cool.
For me.
And then I think there's another level of power and benefit when you transfer it over into the When I Heal sheet and you make a commitment to do something different than that. It's another whole level of opening and awareness. And again, that ability to step back and observe your non-being mind in operation. So cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Anyone else have anything moving for you that you need some support with?
Anne, go ahead, and then Dre, you're after her.
Hey, welcome, Dre.
I'm first. Jesus, let me up. So two things. One, so if I had trouble setting boundaries, would that equate to watching my mom, like, not speak up because she didn't know how to
She probably modeled it for you. You're not allowed to speak up. You're a woman. Hey.
Right. Okay. I never caught that before. And then second, so the third thing of the power person, when I was ultra stressed, what my stepfather would do that I hated the most was accuse me of things that I didn't do. So I'm seeing that I was more judgmental through my second marriage. It was not so much accusing as, so would accusing and judgment be equated? Or?
I mean, I may not speak my accusation, but if mentally I'm making the accusation, I'm making the accusation. It's the same thing.
Yeah, because that was definitely more of it. Okay, thank you. I'm good.
And, you know, if I remember some of the work you've done around your power person, it wasn't very safe to speak up. So you might just do it mentally, but not necessarily speak it.
Ah, yes. Key. Yes, thank you. Absolutely. Okay, I'm complete.
Go ahead, Dre.
I was just listening and I was thinking about two situations and I'm trying to tie them both into one. I hit one after the other and be quick with both of them. Me and Dave was talking earlier today and we were kind of just communicating on what it is we were trying to process through
right. Hair
forgiveness. And one of the things that I noticed is that when I used to, let's say, have a debate with my wife, in my mind, I'm just a passionate person, and I'm just kind of arguing my point. In her mind, she started expressing that come off very violent in the way I was speaking to her. And she said, you know, it almost feels like I'm your enemy. And I should never feel like I'm your enemy, especially over something trivial. And so one thing was going on in my mind, another thing was going on in her mind. Once I heard her say that, and she said, even your facial expressions and all of that, it's almost like you're ready to kill me over us arguing about whatever, you know. And so I started thinking about it, and I said, well, everything was always so intense in my house. My dad was the abuser of me and my mom. It was always every argument led to the fight. In the streets, I took that, and it was like I needed to dominate with putting fear in people, because I know the next step to an argument is a fight. And before it goes there, let me give you a little caution. You don't want to go there. And that was always my way of argument. And I guess I got that from my dad being my power person. And it was until she started telling me how it made her feel and how I came off to her that I was able to kind of harness that and bring it under control. And I'm still working on that, but I have to realize everything isn't life and death. This isn't a life and death situation. This isn't a situation that's going to go to violence. This woman doesn't want to hurt me. She doesn't want to take power from me. She just wants to be heard and understood. And, you know, so I'm still working on that one. And the can you
Michael, you're muted apparently.
Yeah, I think Mike's
or your speaker went off one.
And it's grateful, Sherry. Thank you for sharing.
No problem. Thank you.
No.
Michael's still there. Well, I'll deal with the second thing real quick. Michael was talking about kind of opening up a window for those who are not in the body anymore, that's passed on. I had a situation with my my cousin. He went back to jail, and he said he went over something different than what he really went over. And once I found out the truth of what he went over, I kind of was like, yeah, you know what? I give up on him. I'm not going to support him. I'm not going to be there for him. You know, that's it. That was something stupid. Like, you already did 2 years. You're home. Then you go back for something stupid like that. And I was in a Hebrew class working with a rabbi, and we were doing meditation. The lady, we were paired up in meditation. The lady I was doing the meditation with, she started seeing my granddad. And she said, there's this older man. He's got a bald spot. He looks like this, that, and the other. And I said, yeah, that sounds like my granddad. She said, you have a close relative to you who seems like he's incarcerated or something, or he's like closed in. He needs you really bad. And your grandfather is saying, don't neglect him and don't give up on him.
Wow.
And so I took that and I said, okay, I'll be there for him if granddaddy wants me to be there. The thing is, what I learned from my mom about my granddad is that he gave up on both of his sons. Both of his sons displeased him very, very strongly by getting on drugs, and one just living a crazy life, and he gave up on both of them, put them out the house, and told them don't ever come back. And so my granddad was seeking redemption through my actions with my cousin. So it actually went the other way. He opened up a window of opportunity for me to to forgive and to break that pattern, I should say.
Awesome. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Half of my microphone battery went dead. I just discovered, so my apologies. But I was going to go back and say that, you know, some of the worksheets you might want to do around that were, you know, around dominance, wanting to dominate or wanting to avoid being dominated. And then what were your words? That your wife doesn't want to hurt you?
Yes.
And what was, there was another word that went with it. I lost it.
Oh, she doesn't want to take power from me. She's not
power.
Trying to reduce.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. And, of course, you know, the world that you've shared with me that you came up in, it was always who's got the juice, right? Who's got the power?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
So that would be a dynamic that you bring to the relationship. And what an awesome piece of work that she's able to feed to you the feedback on that, and you're able to receive it. That's so powerful. But that one might be your 77 times 70 worksheet issue around her, you know, the power being taken from you.
Right.
The truth is, Trey, we're not having power anyway. There is a power in us that's got the power, but as long as we're trying to get power, it's a joke.
Yeah. You said something to me when we first talked, and you said that you were talking about hostility being really hidden fear. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I'm not afraid. I'm actually the aggressor. But then I thought about it, and I said, well, I am afraid. I'm afraid of being misunderstood. I'm afraid of being, reduced. My opinion doesn't matter, because it never did matter in my household. You know, you said your opinion, and you got the taste slapped out your mouth. So your opinion never mattered, and so I think my fear was that. I fear you're trying to reduce my opinion to nothing, or you're trying to just win the argument to, you know, take my right to have my own thoughts or my own opinion or what have you. And so, nice. You know, it took me some time to identify it, but it is
nice.
Fear.
Yeah, good piece of work. And, you know, that's the thought disorders that start out early in the child. Maybe, Jeannie, you could put a link or a copy of the physiological effects of emotional suppression.